So we're going to look at the topic of communication this evening. And communication is absolutely vitally important because you can't communicate without communicating. Okay. And communication is transferring the concepts in our mind to somebody else, and hopefully they can understand what you're trying to communicate so that the concept in their mind becomes a very similar one than what you had. Transferring that from one mind to another mind through verbal communication gets to be a challenge, doesn't it? Yeah. We're talking male-female, we're talking about Reed-Stump, which is our family backgrounds. We're talking about Eastern Pennsylvania from Western Ohio in our situation. Everything has an impact on communication, really does. I think what I'd like to do to start with is you have a handout, and I'd like to look at the one on conflict. Okay, so if you have your paper there on conflict, I don't have that on a PowerPoint. But this was given a few weeks ago at the Heralds of Hope, and I was scribbling notes, and I actually want to get his talk because it was very well given, and I thought it was worthwhile sharing. So I went home, put it into notes so that I could maybe make some sense out of it. So Keith Zimmerman of Country Gardens. Some of you might know him. Anybody know Keith Zimmerman from Country Gardens over in Lancaster County? Okay, you don't. I met him for the first time, and he was just a very good communicator. But he hit us all with something that I don't think we normally think about. He says conflict is neither positive nor negative. It's neutral. What do you think of that? You know, when you first think of conflict, what do you think? Do you think it's positive or negative?
Negative.
Yeah, how about that? And for him to say it's neither, it's how we respond which either makes it productive or destructive. It really caused us to reevaluate that. So when you think of conflict, when conflict occurs, what's your normal response?
Push back?
Mm-hmm. Run, okay. Shut down.
Defensive.
What?
Defensive.
Freeze.
Anger.
Man, that's all negative, isn't it? Yeah, but isn't that our normal response to conflict? What we have to understand is conflict. You can't avoid conflict. There is going to be conflict in absolutely every relationship that you have. If there isn't, there's probably a problem. It means that somebody has just rolled over and played dead and just is going to go along with everything, and they've been shut down. And that happens at times. But that's not healthy. Now you have a different conflict. Now you've turned the external conflict into internal conflict. And that person's just not responding, but they're full of internal conflict. So how we respond is so, so important. So if you look at your notes there, he's from Country Gardens, and he says, be a gardener, not a mechanic. What do mechanics do?
Fix.
Yeah, we fix things. What do gardeners do? They plant and they nurture. Gardeners create the environment for growth, okay? And we don't make the seed grow, but we can create the environment. And I happen to be a mechanic, okay? And Grace would tell you, I was always trying to fix her. I fix lawnmowers, I fix chainsaws, I fix tractors, I fix things. I go to work, and that's what I do. People bring me broken things to fix. She needed to be fixed, right? All I can tell you is do you like to be fixed, or do you like to be heard and cared for? You see, people don't need to be fixed. We think they need to be fixed, but we need to be able to communicate. And communication creates, we're going to be talking about that. And there's ways to communicate that are healthy. There's ways to communicate that are unhealthy. But if we see that conflict is neither negative or positive, it's how we respond which either makes it productive or destructive. I think that's really important, very important. So that diagram with the curved lines there, it says we enter untested. We enter untested, and then we can emerge. It doesn't mean we do emerge, but we can emerge productive, enduring, authentic, deep, maturing. You see, if we handle conflict correctly, both people can come out the other side with those positive things that they're experiencing in their life. That should be the goal of all conflict. But if we're a gardener instead of a mechanic, when we approach the conflict, if we go in ready to listen, quick to hear, slow to speak, right? Isn't that what the scriptures tell us to do? That's not me. I'm quick to speak, slow to hear. That's setting up conflict to become destructive instead of productive. So on the left side underneath there, those unhealthy things, that's what we were listening to. I said, so how do we respond? Well, we do that. We avoid. We go defensive. We withdraw. We resent. We get angry, okay? And then on the other side, the healthy productive is to be approachable. I need to make sure that when there's conflict, I'm approachable. I'm open, and I'm ready to sit down, and we can talk and talk openly about this. And I'm willing to hear something that I might not agree with. I have to be willing to hear my wife tell me things that I might not agree with. I might think it's wrong, but I need to listen, and I need to make sure that I'm listening instead of developing my response. You ever do that? You know, when somebody's talking, especially when your spouse is talking, you are so busy hearing the first words she said, so you can, or he said, so you can, you're already formulating your response and you miss the rest of the communication. Anybody here like that? Yeah. Yeah. We must listen. We must listen, 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 so that we hear what's being said, not only the words, and we're going to talk about that up here in communication styles, not only we're listening to the words, we're listening to the tone of voice. And we're watching body language. Okay? We're watching facial expressions. We're trying, and we must listen for that. We must observe that. Okay? So we will either talk things out or we will act out. So we must make sure that we're listening. We have to listen. And that's something I'm working on, really, really working on. I remember one time I was in the back room. Probably on my lazy boy, who knows, but I heard Grace at the computer. No, she wasn't either. She was out at the table. And I heard her talking. And I didn't think there was anybody else in the house. And it sounded pretty aggressive. And she was really, really talking. And I go out there, and there was nobody else there. She was not on the phone. She was just talking. And she was talking very animated and very intense. And I pulled out a chair and sat there and listened. Do you know what I was listening to? I was listening to a huge amount of frustration that had built up toward me for a long time because I hadn't listened to what she was having to say. And it was coming out, and she was venting. It had built up to the place where the steam was coming out. You know, it was getting ready to pop. And I sat there and listened. And I could have told you why half the stuff she was saying I didn't agree with and why I wanted to fix it and why I wanted to correct it. And I just sat and listened. I did not say a word, but I listened and I learned. And I learned that I better pay attention. She wasn't talking to me. She was talking to herself or to whatever. She just needed to come out. And then because of that, I listened for until she was done. And then I started caring and just say, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. You see, it goes back to that forgiveness thing where I needed to hear where I had created hurt and pain and I had developed a debt and I had to ask her for forgiveness for the debt that I created that was causing that just to come out. Okay, so it was an area of conflict, and if I would have waded into that thing and started defending myself, I would have lost the battle, maybe lost the war. Yeah. And so we got to be careful. And so that taught me a huge lesson. And I started listening a lot better after that because I didn't want her to get to that place again. But she had got to the place where she couldn't handle it anymore. That was serious, really serious. OK, Can you imagine the difficult conversations down below there? How do you think Mary could tell Joseph that she was pregnant? What do you think that conversation was like? You know, when you read the scriptures, we don't think about how intense that would have been. But can you imagine? Can you imagine that? It wasn't like a wife telling her husband, hey, we're expecting a baby. They weren't married yet. They hadn't had sex yet. And for her to tell him, and he had it in his mind to put her away privately so it wouldn't make a big stink because he was caring about her. But can you imagine him hearing that? That was pretty difficult. How about Abraham talking to Lot and saying, you know what, it's better we separate. Our herdsmen are fighting. We're not getting along. Let's separate. Let's divide the territory. And then Abraham said, you choose. Isn't that interesting? You see, conflict was there. And that teaches us a little bit about we don't have to win. Because you see, when we do it right, God ends up being able to provide the blessing that he did to Abraham. Jesus to his disciples. I think this is a really good one. They were walking along the way, and Jesus was a little bit ahead, and guess what they were talking about? Who's greatest in the kingdom? And when he gets to where they were going, he said, hey, what were you talking about back there? They didn't want to say. But he knew. And you know what's interesting? He sat down there. He turned around. He pulled them around him. You see, he was going to deal with this conflict in a healthy way. And he just sat there and he taught them. He taught them with humility, but he taught them with straightforward talk. And he said, no. He says, don't worry about who's going to be the greatest. He who wants to be greatest among you, let him become the greatest, the servant of all. And men, God has called us to die for our wives. He called us to be a servant. He calls us to lead, yes, but he called us to be a servant. But he calls all of us, men and women, to submit to one another. That's what the scriptures say. We always think that it's wives supposed to submit to their husbands. You know what the scripture says before it says wives submit to your husbands? It says submit yourselves one to another. That's really important for us to see. That is one of the greatest steps in resolving conflict, is going into it with a spirit of submission instead of dominance and thinking that I'm right and I've got to win. No, that's not a healthy one. So humility. He didn't accuse. He didn't find fault. You see, he could have told him. He says, you guys, can you imagine developing a team out of the disciples? How would you like Peter on your team? How would you like that? Oh, how about the sons of thunder, the mama's boys? Remember? Hey, Jesus, one on the right, one on the left. Those are my boys. Wow. Okay. He took a motley crew and he formed a team out of them. You know, that's what we do as dads. It's what we do as pastors. It's what we do as leaders. It's what we do as, moms. Mm-hmm. We take this, what God has given us, and then we work with it. And we develop something beautiful. A team that couldn't be defeated because God was in it. Yeah. So humility comes from the Latin humilis, lowly, from humus, ground. Isn't that interesting that humility comes from the medium where growth happens? Isn't that pretty interesting? I'm not going to read that story. You can read the story about the police officer. Okay? So I'll wait to go over the back until later, and we're going to look at the PowerPoint up here. So let's take a look at the communication at the PowerPoint up here. So when we look at communication, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Death and life are in, can you hear that? This is really serious stuff. Okay, death and life are in the power of the tongue. You know, you ever hear the story, you ever hear the saying, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me? Do you ever hear that? That's a lie from the pit of hell. Okay? Because Proverbs says, he says, words are like a sword. They pierce. They damage. They hurt. You can't take words back, so be careful when they come out. Because when you say something, people remember that. They can remember it for years and years and years. One of my brother's best friends grew up, and his dad kept telling him, you'll never amount to anything. He spent his whole life trying to prove to his dad that he could amount to something. He went bankrupt twice. Why? because his dad told him he'd never amount to anything, and he became self-fulfilling. Okay, words are powerful. It says death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. There's another version that says this. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, so you must accept the consequences of your words. Our words have consequences. So let's be careful how we talk to one another. You can't take them back. And they're powerful. They're meaningful. I have decided, listen, my brothers, my sisters, I have decided, some of you maybe experienced a little bit of this weekend, because I looked at some of you and I tried to speak life into you. I tried to communicate how important you are. Because you see, we come from backgrounds where that's not been really given. How about if we start looking for ways to speak life into each other? When you see somebody that's struggling and hurting, what if you come alongside them instead of critiquing them and telling them where they're stepping wrongly? What if you tell them, hey, I want to tell you what I see in you. I want to tell you who I see in you. And then you speak life into them. You give life to them. I just got a text on the way to church this evening. I love you, Dad. Blessings as you teach. 40-some-year-old married woman with 6 children living in New York. You know what? She's experienced a father's love. So has her husband. I'm dad to him too. I'm grandpa to those children. That's what I choose to do. It's what Paul says, though you have 10,000 instructors in Christ, you don't have any fathers. Let's try and be life-giving fathers. Can we do that? How about if we be life-giving mothers, and we start doing it to our children, and we do it to our grandchildren, we do it to our brothers, our sisters, our neighbors? We can do this. We can do this. We can be life-giving. Okay, it's powerful. It really is. So here's a communication diagram. I think I like this diagram. And I don't have it on your handout. I sent these PowerPoints to Arlen, so I think he'll make it available for you. So I put some PowerPoints on there that we aren't probably going to look at, so have fun with them. Take them and make them good and teach them to somebody else, but don't give me the credit, because then if you teach it wrong, they'll blame me. Okay, just teasing. I don't mean that. So here's communication. If you look at that diagram, parent to parent, adult to adult, child to child, all that's okay, isn't it? Isn't that okay? You see, do parents talk to each other? Of course they do. A mom and dad talks. There's nothing wrong with that. That works. Parents have to talk to each other, right? And do children talk to each other? Of course children talk to each other. That's okay. That's fine. And adults talk to each other. Parents talk to children. Yes, children talk to parents. Child talks to an adult. It happens here at church. Somebody who's not a parent, you talk to a child. All those communications are perfectly fine. In marriage, there is only one communication that is okay, and that's two adults talking to each other, okay? Yes, you can still, as parents, talk to each other. But for the most part, even when you're talking as parents, it's going to be two adults talking to each other. Two adults talking with each other. Now, stop, please chew on this and think about this. Because you see, it's not okay in marriage for a parent to talk to their spouse, for a spouse to talk to a spouse from a parent's perspective. So a husband comes out of the bedroom and he's getting ready to go to church, and his wife looks at him and, "You're not going to wear that to church, are you?" Or no, she don't say, "Are you?" "You're not going to wear that to church." You see, that's a parent talking to a child. That don't work. He says, "Oh, of course not. I just wanted to see what you would say." It doesn't work. Now she could say, "Oh, honey, that shirt and that dress, that shirt and those pair of pants don't go together. Do you care if I help you?" That's okay. That's okay. That's a spouse to a spouse. That's a tasteful woman to a husband who has no taste. Okay, that's all right. That's okay. It's okay. But you see, parent to child is not okay. You don't do that. And you see, Grace says, when Grace is working, she's not very techie, and I'm sort of a little bit, not overly, but a little bit. But she'll have problems at the computer, and I'll hear her in there talking to the computer. And I say, honey, you need any help? Well, yeah, but she doesn't want me to help, because she says whenever I help, I talk to her like a child. Ooh. So I'm trying really to be careful when I go in to help her, to talk to her like an adult. Do you know what's interesting? And I gave you that illustration was it last evening, when I talked to her about the burn pile, okay? You see, but what happens is because the way her father talked to her, that she brings that history and memory along into our relationship. So when I say something, even if I don't try and speak from a parent to a child, she'll hear it that way. So I have to be extra careful to make sure that I am not speaking in a condescending tone of voice, or, you know, it's so easy for me to say, well, hey, if you click here, click, you know, no. I have to carefully communicate where to go and how to do it. Okay, and that's something I'm still learning. She told me to tell you that I'm talking on communication, that I have a lot of practice to do, okay? She said, are you going to tell them you need practice? I said, yeah, I'll tell them. So that's not okay. In marriage, that's not okay. Well, what about an adult to a child? No, that's not okay either. Okay, so, for example, maybe you and your spouse are talking and you go, I can't believe you did something so stupid. Okay, now that's an adult talking to a child. You're talking down. And then the other person has to make a decision. You think that was stupid. What you did the other day was really ridiculous. Now, guess what you have now? You have two children talking to each other. Now your two children fighting, and you're both adults, and it's sort of ridiculous, isn't it? And your children are watching you, and you're teaching them well. Anybody get there? Yeah. Okay, it works. Okay, don't point at your parents. That's not nice. Okay. But see all these kind of communications, they're all okay, but not in marriage. Not in marriage. You see, in marriage, you see, none of those work well because the reason is because adults always speak with respect. Adults always speak with respect. And respect is tone of voice, it's body language, it's choice of words. Two adults always communicate to each other with respect. If you're a husband and wife, you still are two adults. You communicate with respect. It's really important to remember that. But the same thing is true with brothers and sisters. The same thing is true at work. Wherever you are, adults communicate with respect. Whenever somebody uses with their tone of voice, loses that respect, the other person is going to react. And here's the whole thing, is when you have that, so if I say, you know, if I say to Grace, I can't believe you did something so ridiculous as that. That was stupid. Now, if she can remain an adult and say, well, you know, I didn't intend for that to happen. I wasn't trying to make you feel that way, or I wasn't trying to do something stupid. I just probably made a mistake. And then if I can keep on going, well, it was dumb. I can't believe you did that. And see, if she can stay an adult, if one person can stay an adult, you can get past this. But it's when you don't stay an adult and you go there, now you're in trouble, okay? And then it deteriorates. So the goal is every single one of us blows this at times. And when you blow it, if the other person can stay an adult and respond with respect, then you can get past this and you can grow past it. Okay? Does that make any sense? A little bit. Yeah. So the goal is to stay an adult so that you can communicate like this. There you go. All right? All the rest of them, that's going to cause trouble. Maybe you can remember that diagram when you're thinking about things. Okay? Family of origin has so much to do with that. Family of origin, we bring that, how we communicate. Dave Musser back home, he's a counselor in Schaeferstown. I hand that out at our Preparing for Marriage. It's questions, family of origin questions. It's two pages where I tell couples before they're married, you go out on dates and you ask each other these questions. And it deals with many different areas, and there's questions there to see how your family of origin dealt with this compared to my family of origin. And then you can talk about those differences. How did your family of origin handle finances? Who handled the finances? Who paid the bills? Well, in our home, it was the opposite of that. Well, when you get married, you see, if you don't talk about those things, now you have areas of conflict. You ever notice that God has a sense of humor putting opposites together? Okay. A spender with a saver? A messy with an organized person? Yeah, it's just sort of that way. Uh-huh. But when you learn to communicate, you can blend that together. So here's a powerful scripture that really grips me, and I mentioned it earlier, but James 2 says, so speak and so act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom. So speak and so act. You see, our speech and our actions are how we interact with people. And look what James is saying. Because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. I am going to be judged. The law, it says, by the law that gives freedom is that law that Paul says, all the other law and the prophets hang on this one word, thou shalt love your neighbor as yourself. How do you love your neighbor as yourself? Well, can I borrow you for a minute? Come on up here. Oh, yeah, I don't care who it is. Yeah, one of you, yeah. Okay. So if you and I are having an argument, and we're really disagreeing, keep your hands in your pocket, yeah. Okay. So how am I going to resolve this? We're totally disagreeing, and we're at odds with each other. So if you love your neighbor as yourself, what I have to do is before I respond to him, I have to put my, you go over there and stand, I have to put myself in his shoes. Now I need to talk to him like if I were in his shoes, I would want him to talk to me. Does that make any sense? That's how you love the neighbor as yourself. Because you see, I might see all his mistakes and faults, and I might really be frustrated with what he's done, but I got to put myself in his shoes and say, if I'm in his shoes, how would I want to be spoken to? And then that's how I'm going to speak to him. That's how you love your neighbor as yourself. Thank you. Okay. The old Indian proverb, don't judge a person until you walk a mile in their moccasins. Okay. Okay, you put yourself in the other person's shoes before you start making judgment calls and before you start communicating. That works so well. It's just remembering it and practicing it. Look what it says, so speak and so act, as those are going to be judged by the way I treat that person. And I think the first person that I see that I'm going to be judged by is how I have treated Grace, how I've communicated with Grace. And I have a lot of making up to do. A lot of making up to do. We're working at it. Okay. We will for the rest of our lives. We're going to keep on growing together. We're going to grow together, and we keep on. We're going to spend the next 50 years doing that. Okay, so now here's another part of communication. So there's blue and there's pink. Okay, so here I have a thought in my mind. So I'm going to try and communicate that to Grace, who is pink. So what am I going to do? I'm going to encode my thoughts, and when we communicate, we take our thoughts and we put them into words, right? We put them into words, and so then I speak, and guess what? She hears, I speak blue, she hears pink. Okay? And she hears pink words. I'm speaking blue, she hears pink, and then she decodes, and then she comes up with, ought thou. Instead of thought, it's ought thou, okay? And so it's just the other day when I started talking to her about the burn pile, she goes, what did I do wrong now? Okay? You see, I just wanted to share my thoughts about that. It's just what happens. It's what happens. It comes from family of origin. But we have to understand that instead of getting upset and say, why can't you just listen once? No, you go back and you say, hey, no, you didn't do anything wrong. I just was trying to explain something to you that here's how I think we can keep the burn pile from growing into a big mound again, which is going to cause trouble. And I would like it. Let's work at that. Okay. And so now here's what's interesting. How you communicate. Words, you'd think, would be the biggest part of it, but words, these are some statistics that people put out there, and I'm just telling you, you can assign your own to it, but it's close. Words are 10% of the communication, and body language is 20%, okay? And tone of voice is 70%. Wow, 20% is tone of voice. You know, I could say, honey, I love you. Or I could say, honey, I love you. And if I ever change my mind, I'll let you know. Okay. You see, tone of voice and body language has so much to do with it. The words, yes, they're important, but not near like the body language and the tone of voice. That is so important. When you talk to your children, you know, do you know what we have? We've been raised in environments where our parents were always correcting us, and many times, how about if you would start trying to catch your children doing things right instead of catching them doing things wrong? Try it. Try it and watch the atmosphere in your home change. Yes, you have to correct the wrong things. It don't mean you ignore that, but what if you start catching them doing things right? I have really tried to do this with my grandchildren. It's so easy to wait till they're squabbling and then go in and wait and straighten them out. But you know, when I see the one really caring for the other one, I go, wow, thank you. Man, that was awesome how you treated your sister. Way to go, Jordan. Papaw's girl, I'm proud of you, okay? I want to reinforce when they're doing things right. Catch them doing things. How many of you like being caught doing things right? Uh-huh. Well, then don't you think they do? Sure. So what I encourage in our business, we had a power equipment business, and so I was the boss for years, and we had the shop, the repair shop, we had the sales, and we had parts. And you know what? I would watch communications break down, especially between sales and the repair, because they would prep equipment. And what I saw is this breakdown of communication. There was statements that would be made, and then they wouldn't hear it right. And so we had a whole session on this at one of our breakfast meetings, and I said, what I want you to do is I want you to start giving reflective response. And this is what we teach in Preparing for Marriage, is do reflective response. So what is reflective response? Well, reflective response is did I hear you say, okay, whoops, I didn't put the reflective response out there. But so what reflective response is did I hear you say, did I understand you to say this, this, and this, and this? And then that person can say, yeah, that's what I said. Or they can say, oh, no, that's not what I meant. I meant this. Because, you know, I can tell Grace something, and I know what I meant, but how it came out and how she received it, it didn't make sense to her. It meant something else to her, and she might have went ahead and did that, and I'm going, well, why didn't she follow through? Well, she thought she did follow through, or she didn't understand. Reflective response is saying, you know, hey, did I hear you say this? And then you can say, the other person can say, well, yeah, that's what I said, or no, I meant this, and then we can correct it. You see, that keeps conflict from developing, or it makes conflict turn into something productive instead of unproductive. Okay. Any comments so far? We've been chewing around here, we've been talking. Is this making sense at all, a little bit, maybe? Okay. Any comments, questions, thoughts? So here's something else that I like this diagram, because you see, we communicate on three different levels. Up there is, so on the tip of your fingers, that's your spirit, okay? And then in the middle there, that's your soul, and then in the middle of that is your body. So when you communicate, you communicate in all those different ways. How many of you never saw me before this weekend? Okay. So when you saw me, Malcolm, can I pick on you?
Sure.
When you saw me, what did you think? Watch it. Watch it. Watch it. Huh?
You were short.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. See? Yeah.
I thought you, the next thing I thought was you were a powerful person inside.
Okay. See, what happened is when you looked at me, you were drawing conclusions, right? I mean, you see, when you communicate on a soul level without any communication. Okay? So when you saw me, you saw this short guy. Man, I thought he would have been bigger than that, okay? All right. That's pretty normal. I hear that a lot. But then when I started talking, now you were hearing my soul. Now you were hearing me communicate. Now you speak on a soul level. And then when we met, shook hands. Now we communicated on all three levels. Okay? We had this, you look at each other, you see somebody's you see their how they dress, how they wear their hair, choice of colors. You communicate and you're drawing conclusions, and those conclusions might necessarily be accurate, but you're drawing conclusions. And then when you start talking to each other, hey, my name's Jason, your name's Malcolm. Now we shared that information. Now we're communicating on a soul level. We reach over and we shake each other's hands. Now we're communicating on a body level. We do this all the time, all the time. So what I use this illustration. So I come home from work, and it's been raining outside, and so I open the door, I open the kitchen door, come walking in, and Grace is at the stove, and she's making supper. And she looks, and I look at her, and everything's fine, until she looks down at the floor. And all of a sudden, her countenance falls. She goes, and we haven't even talked yet, okay? But we're communicating. And she looks down, and I see her eyes go down, and I turn around, and I look, and I go, muddy footprints. Now, I have a choice to make. I can back up, take my shoes off, go get a rag, wipe it up, and her face brightens back up again. Or I can say, it's not too bad. Floor needs mopped anyway. So, you see, when she looked down, all of a sudden her countenance went, and guess where it closed over? So I kept on walking. Wasn't much. You know, it really wasn't. Honestly, it wasn't. Don't you believe me? Okay. So we sit down to eat, and then it's pretty quiet, and I say, well, how are the kids today? Fine. Yeah, well, what did you do? Well, you know, how was your day, and what happened? Nothing, not much of anything. Is there something wrong? Nope. Honey, there's something wrong. There is not. Well, you're acting like something's wrong. There's nothing wrong. So at night, we're laying in bed, and honey, what? Did you ever hug a ironing board? You see, because when we offend the spirit, it closes over our communication, and then it closes over the body. Okay? You see, that is so accurate. That's a Gary Smalley illustration from many years ago, and it stuck with me. It's powerful, because that's exactly what happens in communication. Now, once again, if I would have stopped, took my shoes off, wiped it up, everything would have been fine. We could have had a good conversation at the table. But you see, because I thought, oh, well, it wasn't bad. No, you see, we do this all the time. We minimize how the other person sees something, and it offends their spirit. And it's especially guys will do this to their gals, more than gals will do it to their guys, although it can work both directions. Okay? So when you notice that there's something going on, that person is not communicating well, you know that there's probably something that offended the spirit. Maybe something you did or didn't do or should have done or whatever. Then you want to go back and you want to say, honey, something doesn't seem right. You seem like you're struggling with something. What's wrong? Nothing. Okay, well, you got to say, well, yeah, but there is. And you know, honey, I probably did it. It was probably my fault, but I'm not aware of it. So can you help me see it? do you remember when you did this, this, and this? You mean you that bugged you that bad? Now I'm in trouble. It's going to take 2 months to open that one up. Okay, you see, this is what happens all the time. This is so typical. Does this make any sense? Okay, you see, we got to be aware of what's going on in the other person's spirit. We can tell when their countenance falls. You might come home and the countenance has fallen, and maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was something else that happened. Maybe it was somebody else that they had a conversation with and it didn't go well. Maybe it was with their mother or their father or their uncle or their aunt or their sister or their brother. And then you might have to care about that so that the spirit can heal. And you might have to care about that so they know that you care, so she feels cared for, he feels cared for. He might come home really out because, well, maybe he got fired that day. And he's really down and out. Wow, you're going to have to do a lot of caring about that. Okay, it's so important, so important. It really is. So on the back of your handout, there's the four horsemen of the apocalypse, okay? So before you, I don't want you to go there right now and read it. It's just, you can read that later, but let's just keep going here. The four communications, four horsemen of the apocalypse. Where does that come from? Well, in Revelation, the four horsemen of the apocalypse is a sign that the end is coming, okay? And so these four communication approaches are the four horsemen of the apocalypse. It came out of John Gottman's research. John Gottman is a Jew. He never was very good at relationships with the opposite sex, and he actually is divorced and remarried. But he has put together some really, really interesting information on communication. He had a home that he opened up as a sort of a research place, and people could go there for counseling. And what they would do if they went there, they got totally wired. They got wired so that their body temperature would be recorded 24 hours, 24/7. These things would happen while they were there for maybe a week or maybe 2 weeks. I don't remember how long it was, but their pulse rate, their temperature, their blood pressure, all those things would be monitored, and everything they said would be recorded. They had to agree to that to go there. And you know, at the end of the time they spent there, he could predict with a 96% success rate whether that marriage would last or fail, or whether that relationship would last or fail, just by analyzing that information. And so he came up with these four horsemen of the apocalypse. Hurtful words and events that create periods of alienation are inevitable in every relationship. How we respond determines the health and joy and satisfaction of our future. Can you hear that? It's our response. That's where that whole conflict comes in. How we respond determines what happens. The conflict's inevitable. It's going to be there. So here you do have it on your handout, but just forget your handout for now. Let's just look up there. You see, maybe it's too hard to read, so you can go on your handout. But he put together a healthy way of responding and an unhealthy way. And so in healthy, he says people are gentle with one another. They're gentle with each other. He says these are the marriages that are going to work and be healthy. He says the majority of time, they're going to be gentle with each other. Gentleness. Whereas on the other side, on the unhealthy side, they were critical. They're pointing out their partner's defects, hoping they would change. We're so good at that, aren't we? We're good at pointing out our partner's defects. So we want to be gentle. And then number two, on the healthy side, they took responsibility for their part of the problem. Don't always assign the fault to somebody else. Be willing to say, you know what, I blew it. Man, I think I learned that lesson a long time ago, especially with my children. I started telling my children, I am so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm going to give you an illustration. Grace doesn't like me giving this illustration, but I asked my daughter for permission. And so I told her, well, honey, I asked for our daughter's permission. She said it's okay for me to share it. So please don't be too hard on me for this, because I try to use my own mistakes as teachable moments. But we were in the kitchen. My daughter was about 13 years old. And she started talking back very disrespectfully to grace. And it really made me, ticked me off. Okay? So I just grabbed her right here and I went boom against the side of the wall in the kitchen. Thunk. I said, "You will not talk to my wife that way." And I thought that was it. Okay? 3 or 4 years later, I would take my daughter out on dates. I would recommend you do the same. My wife would take my son out on dates. I would take my son out on dates. We just would, yeah, that's, I just wanted to stay in tune with them. So here's Grace, here's Laura and I eating breakfast together one morning at a really nice restaurant. And we're there eating and she goes, "Daddy, do you love me?" And my response was, "Of course I love you, honey, you know that." And then I'm eating and I'm going, "Why did she ask?" So I said, "Why did you ask Dad if I love you?" And she goes, "Do you remember when you slammed me up against the wall?" Now just please hear. I had a couple options in responding. You know, the one response could have been, "Well, yeah, do you remember how you were mouthing off Mom and you were really being disrespectful?" Okay, I could have said that. And you know what that would have done? It would have cemented that pain in her heart. But instead I said, "Oh, Laura, I'm so sorry." I said, I responded out of anger. I responded out of frustration because you were talking. I didn't say that. I just said, I responded out of anger. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I hurt your heart with my anger and my response. Can you find a place in your heart to forgive Dad for treating you like that? She goes, "Sure, Dad." And she kept eating and it was all gone. I was so grateful that I had the opportunity to heal a hurt that I had caused 2 or 3 years earlier. And I was not aware of it. It had been gone. Okay? And you know what I started doing after that? I started asking both my son and my daughter if there were things that were, and I asked her, I said, "Is there anything else that Dad has done that has hurt you that's still sticking inside? If there is, I want you to tell me about it because I want to make it right." Listen, can you hear that? Can you hear that? We can humble ourselves. We can approach things with humility, which becomes a place where nurturing and growth can take place. And so that was my heartbeat. And I did that with my son as well. I said, "Hey, Jaron, you know, is there anything that Dad has said or done that really sticks in your craw that makes you frustrated and I've hurt you?" You know, and you know, he said there wasn't. But at least I approached him to see. And maybe there was, but he didn't say so. And I started asking him every so often, "Hey, are we okay? Dad do anything, say anything that caused you grief and hurt?" You see, I want to stay on top of that. I don't quit being a dad. I don't quit telling them that this needs to be done or that needs to be done. But I want to make sure that I'm not creating hurt and pain that's still there. Some of you are still carrying hurt and pain from words that your dad and mom have spoken to you. That's where we go back to this morning's teaching on forgiveness. Okay? That's how we get rid of that. Okay? Are you with me? Okay. All right. So then we take responsibility for our problem. And so, like when somebody's saying something, you go, "Interesting, tell me more about what you see as our problem and how I contribute to it." You see, that's a way of, when Grace and I are talking, if we're struggling with something, you know, "Honey, help me understand how I'm contributing to the problem. You know, I know you want, yeah, I'm not doing something that you would like to see me do." And then we can start talking about it. And she might mention something, and it might be something that I go, "Well, you know," instead of defending myself, I might explain and say, "Hey, well, I felt like that needed to be done, so that's why I did it, and I'm sorry it impacted you that way. I'm sorry, forgive me for that." Okay? And what it does is it opens the door for two-way communication. She feels safe to tell me anything, and I feel safe that I can tell her just about anything, too. Okay? Speaking the truth in love, speaking it with gentleness and caring. I don't know if you looked on that other paper about conflict resolution. You don't have to go back there, but at the bottom, speaking the truth in love, we can either say something very harsh and it's with a hammer, or we can say something very soft and it's with velvet. A couple weeks ago, I had a conversation with a brother, and I needed to tell him some difficult things. And you know what I did? I said it in a way, and he got really hurt by it. And he told me, he says, Jason, he says, I need a break from you. He says, you're not safe to talk to. That was just a couple weeks ago. I went back and asked him his forgiveness. We're still going to have to talk this thing through. What I said needed to be said, but you know what I probably did? I probably used more of a hammer and less velvet. And when you speak the truth in love, you take the hammer and you wrap it with velvet. Okay? Because sometimes you have to say some pretty direct things, but you speak the truth in love. Doesn't all come across lovey-dovey, so it's not all velvet, but it doesn't come across with a solid ka-thunk, okay? I thunked him too hard, okay? So anyway, I'm just telling you, I make mistakes too, but I went back, I needed to make it right. He and I are doing pretty good, but we need to do a lot more talking yet. We will do more talking, yeah. So defensiveness, okay? That's on the unhealthy side. Defensiveness is warning. Okay, critical is pointing out our partner's defects, hoping they would change, which leads to defensiveness, warding off a perceived attack. It's not my fault, it's yours. And then we launch a counterattack. Or we whine. And I guess what I should do is just bring both of these up here because they're both up there now, okay? Or we whine, presenting ourselves as an innocent victim. I was a good pouter. I was a really good pouter. I'm trying to get past that, okay? I could suck my thumb with the best thumb. Mommy. Okay, you know, don't do that. Don't pout, okay? Don't be a thumb sucker, okay? But then what he saw as something healthy is the ability to self-heal. Confident in one's own identity. And this is something we have to work on. And that's part of the teaching that we do. Part of the resources I gave Arlen and Lois was some of that series on the Foundations for Life, and there's one on identity, is to get your identity as who you are, as a much-loved, chosen, died-for child of God, so that you can know that you are accepted in the Beloved. That's what Ephesians 1 says. You're accepted in the Beloved. When you get your identity, knowing who you are as a child of God, who you're much-loved, you're chosen, you're died-for, He loves you, He cares about you, enough to die for you. Okay? That gives you a confidence that you can self-heal. You can self-heal because you know that even though you're going through conflict, you're cared for and loved. But what you want to do is you want to also give that acceptance to each other in marriage so that you can keep on self-healing. We need that acceptance from each other. Ephesians says you're accepted in the Beloved. Well, I want Grace to feel that she's accepted in the Beloved. And I like feeling like I'm accepted by her too. You see, that's healing. And then the ability to repair. Humble enough to say, I'm really sorry, I blew it. That didn't go very well, did it? Can we talk about it? You see, that kind of talk opens the door for healthy conflict resolution. On the other hand, on the other side, it says contempt. Any statement you make of your partner from a superior place, which is speaking down. I'm more punctual, I'm more intelligent, I'm more knowledgeable, I'm cleaner, I'm tidier. And look what it says underneath contempt. It says, contempt is a wide-spectrum down-regulator of immune functions, an influencing factor in the amount of infectious illnesses a recipient of contempt will get in the next 4 years. Isn't that interesting? Okay. Pretty interesting. And so what we're doing here is we're going over these, and the last one is stonewalling, where the listener withdraws from the communicator. And oftentimes the majority, 80% of stonewallers are men. Okay, because they struggle because they're not quite sure. Their wives oftentimes are better communicators than they are. And so their wife can out-talk them. Did you know that Ephesians chapter 3, I mean not Ephesians, 1 Peter chapter 3, it says, in like manner, likewise you wives, be in submission to your own husbands, that if any of them obey not the word, they can be won without a word. You know what? In the NIV, it would say, without speaking a word. But you gals, do you know how you want to change things? You want to talk. And when men start walking away, you come after them. Okay. So what it says is you can win them without speaking a word by your respectful behavior. Okay. And so men will stonewall because they know their wives can usually out-talk them. So wives, just be aware of that. That when you see your husband stonewalling, oftentimes you think that he's saying, I don't want to listen, I'm not paying attention, but that's not true. John Gottman's research showed that his blood pressure went up, his pulse rate increased, and he was struggling internally. But externally, you just see the stonewall. Okay. Stonewalling is perceived by a mate as avoidance. It's an attempt to calm themselves to not make the situation worse. Just don't say anything. Be quiet. Let her wear out. She'll get over it. Okay. But his stress level increased even when he was stonewalling. So then we're gonna wrap this up very shortly here. So what he's saying is this unhealthy list on the right there on your paper are the four horsemen of the apocalypse. He said when he looks at this and he sees the majority of communication underneath this unhealthy list with the critical, the defensiveness, the contempt, and the stonewalling, he says that relationship is going to go downhill rapidly. So I think it's worthwhile reading on your own The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, because that's where you do not want to go. You want to look at the healthy and say, you know what? This is where I'm going to go. We choose. Choosing. We have the power to choose. Let's see what else is up here. Friendship development. You know what? I'm gonna quit here. Okay, it's 10 after 8 because I wouldn't mind just bouncing off another a lesson with you. Are you patient? Can you handle a little bit more? Are you sure? Are you okay? Okay, then I'm gonna get out of this one. I'm gonna go into a different one, and I'll try and keep that fairly brief. But this is one I wanted to show you because I think it's really, really important. So let me just bring it up here. What did I do with it? Wow, it disappeared on me. Okay. Or did I put it in here? Okay, here it is. I had actually gone over it earlier. And I lost it, so this is not going to be the edited version, so I'm going to have to bounce through some things really fast. So just bear with me. What I see, Foundations for Life, this is a teaching called Foundations for Life, and what I see is people are bound by missing links, and every single one of us know that if you have a chain with missing links, you're not going to bind anything. But when I'm dealing with hurting people, I have found that people are struggling more with things that are missing than things that are present. For example, there's two categories of trauma, harmful by their present and harmful by their absence. What's so interesting is I see people struggle more with the things that were harmful by their absence than harmful by their presence. And people who, for example, what's harmful by their presence? Well, physical, sexual, emotional, verbal, abuse, and things like that. Those are all things that are harmful by their presence. But here's the whole thing. When you have somebody who is experiencing those types of things in their home, there was also this huge absence as well. And so let's look at what's harmful by absence. And I really cut a lot of teaching out here because this is a whole about hour and a half teaching. I'm going to try and keep it in about 15 minutes here. Okay. Not experiencing unconditional love. Not knowing the joy of being a delight. Does anybody here not long to be a delight in somebody's eyes? Don't you long to be a delight in somebody's eyes? Yeah, we all do. We all do. So let me pick on somebody. Let's see. I don't remember. Your name is what?
Brandon.
I could say, hi, Brandon. How are you? Or I could say, hi, how are you? Okay, you see, my response to Brandon was totally different than my response to this gal. What's this gal's name?
Megan.
Hi, Megan, how are you? Are you doing good? Yeah. So Brandon, you see, I could say, hey, Brandon, how's it going? Yeah. Isn't that a whole lot different than what I talked to you before? Absolutely. You see, we can delight in somebody. And when my grandchildren stay overnight, when I hear their footsteps coming down the steps and they come around the corner and they see me sitting on my lazy boy in there or wherever I am, I want them to see this. Okay? I want them to see my eyes and face light up. That's how you show delight. You know, what if we would greet each other as husbands and wives that way? Instead of, you know, when we get up in the morning, what if the first thing, and I really do try to practice this with grace. I really do. I just say, man, good morning. Sure good to see you. Yeah? How many of you know you don't always look the greatest in the morning? But you can greet each other with joy. You can delight in each other. You can choose to delight in each other. And I really choose to do that. I try and do that with people when I meet them. Because we do that with our eyes. Our eyes light up. You know, when I see you in the future, if I remember who you are, and maybe I won't, hey, I remember you from New Hope, yeah. And you see, I want my face to light up. I want you to say, yeah, I want you to know that I'm delighting to see you again. Yeah, that's we communicate. We all long to be a delight with somebody. Not receiving appropriate non-sexual affection. It is so important for our children to receive affection from us. Non-sexual affection. It's important for our mates to receive non-sexual affection from us. Okay? But our children especially. Never touch a child sexually. You will damage him for life. I just can't believe how parents can do that, but man, I run into it way too often. No. Our children desperately need affection. Dads, listen, your daughters need non-sexual affection from you. It's how you jerk-proof your daughters. If you fill their love cup up with loving affection, never touching them inappropriately, they feel cared for and loved by you. If there's something I feel successful, it was the way I cared for my daughters. With healthy affection, because she didn't. When these things are missing, there's this void. And I'm getting way ahead of the teaching, but there's this void. We can jerk proof our daughters by giving them healthy non-sexual affection, because they won't have this void, and they won't long to get it from somewhere else. I just watch that over and over again. Not being taught the important things in life, to persist in doing hard things. Not helped in developing personal skills. These are things that are really important. Tim Keller says, children start life in a state of dependency. They grow physically, but emotionally they're needy, vulnerable, dependent, and either you sacrifice much of your freedom and time in a redemptive way, or they'll suffer tragically in a destructive way. Unfortunately, plenty of parents won't make that sacrifice. This is really important, okay? Very important. Eric Erickson, if a child in their very earliest years learns not to trust a dominant personality in their life, because of abuse, neglect, or abandonment, they have a fundamental inability to attach or trust, and it's a taproot for all other kinds of pathologies. All I can tell you is working with hurting people. This is absolutely true. Three building blocks to build life on that produce security, freedom, strength, and courage. Here they are. Okay? Very simple, easy for you to remember. You don't even have to write them down, because it's easy for you to remember. It's belonging, it's love, and it's significance. Those are the three building blocks. They call it the three-legged stool. You knock one of those out, the stool falls over. Those are the three things that are needed. Your children need this. And where does it come from? It comes from this. Twice in public, Jesus heard it from his Father, and Peter says it so well. It's recorded in each of the Gospels, and Peter, I think it's four times in the Scriptures, or five times in the Scriptures, each gospel, and in Peter. Peter says it so well. Jesus received, this is what it says, Jesus received honor and glory from God the Father. When the voice came to him from the majestic glory, saying, now look what it says. It says he received honor and glory. If Jesus received honor and glory from his Father when he heard these words, don't you think your children can receive honor and glory from their father and their mother when they hear these kind of words? I believe this with all my heart. This is my beloved son. I'm well pleased with him. Hear him. You see, that's belonging. This is my beloved son. Right there is much love. It's unconditional love. Our children need these three things. And I'm well pleased with him. That's significance. I believe that God the Father knew his son needed to hear these three things. He needed these foundational things so he could go through being rejected, being tortured, being spit on, being mocked, and then dying. Your children, I asked this before. Anybody here find life easy? One person, right? Okay. I haven't found life easy, nor will your children. And your children need these foundations so they can handle a difficult life. You can hear me on that? This is something I'm so convinced of. I cut these slides out. Now they're not cut out. We had a committee meeting, and this was on Valentine's Day, and everybody was dressed up in their, not dressed up nice. This was 6 o'clock in the morning, and this dad had taken his daughter out for Valentine's breakfast at 6 o'clock in the morning. What do you think of that? Isn't that cute? Isn't that awesome? Here's what I saw. Oh, wow. But look what's coming next. There goes her dad. You know, see, daddy was capturing her heart. Every single one of us longs to have our heart captured by our father and our mother. Okay? Yeah. Jesus told them, the Son of Man will be handed over to the Gentiles. He'll be rejected. He'll be betrayed. They'll mock him. They'll insult him, spit on him, flog him, and they'll kill him. God knew what his son would need to endure a lot of stuff. What happens when these are missing? A life spent trying to fill the void? Performance, attention-driven, escape, addictive behaviors, codependent relationships. You ever watch people, hurting people, connect with hurting people? Okay. Relationships struggle because they can't bear the weight of our neediness. What happens is, as you see, I got a lot of this from my mom and dad, but I thought grace should give this to me, and I was sucking the life out of her, trying to get her to give me these things. What God wants us men to do is to get it from our Heavenly Father so we in turn can give it to other people. I'm going to really buzz through some of this stuff. Brene Brown. Anybody ever hear Brene Brown? Okay, Brene Brown, very interesting person. She did her doctoral thesis on shame. And she's not a believer. Anyway, not as we would see it. But look what she came up with her doctoral thesis. She goes, we're biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to be loved and to belong. I get pumped when I see worldly people doing a research paper and coming up with the same thing God comes up with. Isn't that cool? And she goes, when those needs are not met, we break, we fall apart, we numb, we ache, we hurt others, and we get sick because there's insufficient funds in our emotional bank account. What do you think of that? I gave this to, this whole PowerPoint is available to you through Arlen's. And there's 84 slides in it. We're not doing that, okay? Relax. Okay, because what it does is I do this teaching in four different sections. Parents to children, husbands to wives, the church. I can't remember what the other one was. A child that's being abused by its parents doesn't stop loving its parents. It stops loving itself. Then there's a capstone. You have the belonging, love, and significance. You have forgotten the word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. Does anybody know what that word of encouragement is that addresses you as sons? Be strong. Be strong? I set you up, right? You know what it is? The Lord disciplines. The Lord disciplines the one he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son. You see, discipline proves belonging. And here's the whole thing. If you don't give these three down here, if you don't give belonging, love, and significance, then when you discipline, it's no longer discipline. Now it's punishment. Okay? And punishment will damage. Discipline is given because you love them enough that you're not going to let them get away with doing bad things that will damage them. But if you don't have belonging, love, and significance in place, then it will come across as punishment, not discipline. Here's why it proves belonging. How many of you discipline your neighbor children? Raise your hand. How many of you would like to discipline your neighbor children? Raise your hand. See, the reason why you don't discipline your neighbor children is that they don't belong to you. And God says he disciplines the one he loves. He disciplines his children. Okay, so here's a little model. I'm going to watch it. I'll at 8:30, I'm going to close the computer, okay? I think. Discipline built on belonging, love, and significance. You see, God wants us to put boundaries in place, and now a discipline is built on belonging, love, and significance. This is a model for biblical discipline. So you have the boundaries are heavier down here at the bottom, okay? The boundaries are heavier, and as the children get older, they get smaller and smaller. And what that does is you give your children more and more freedom. I use the illustration of taking my children out because we live on not far from a road that's pretty busy, and the mailbox is on across the road. So I'm not going to tell my four-year-old to go out and get the mail, but I'm going to tell them they have to play in the backyard, not the front yard. But when we go out to get the mail, I'll take them out by the hand. We'll walk out to the road, and then we'll look both ways. And you see, I'm going to teach them how to be sensitive to listen for traffic, to look both ways, and then to go across and get the mail. And shortly, I'm going to watch them and see if they're picking up on this. And then after a while, I'll say, hey, go get the mail. And they'll go get the mail. They'll be safe because I trained them. I taught them how to safely cross the road and get the mail. And that's the way life should be. And then you see, now, after a while, it's okay for them to be in the front yard because they're responsible enough to not be out on that road. So that goes with every other thing in life. So what you do is you move from law. When the children are small, you will not go out on that front yard. You go out in that front yard, you're gonna experience pain. Okay? That's law. But as you teach them and you replace it with principle, here's the reason why you do this. Here's how you do this. Let me go with you and show you how to do this. Now you can do it on your own. You're replacing law with principle. And so it's a balance of truth and grace. Grace and truth balance each other. It produces maturity. And it shows right concepts of God, because God is a balance of truth and grace. And it's his justice, it's his mercy. But here's the way many of us were disciplined. Discipline built on performance-based acceptance. Walls create feelings of being controlled or trapped, and it produces anger and rebellion. Make any sense? Are you with me? Okay. This is where so many of us grew up. And it was based on truth and severity. And what you see is belonging, love, and significance. They're in disarray. They're not there solidly. And it's an overbalance of God's truth. And then you use scripture to reinforce it yet, and that's become spiritual abuse. And then it becomes punishment instead of discipline. And it really communicates that I'm not loved, and it produces wrong concepts of God. Right? You get it? I'm not going to do this one. Okay, so what do we do when we're missing these? We need to receive honor from God our Father by hearing his voice. So, brothers and sisters, as we wrap this up, I want you to hear God speak to you tonight. I want every one of you to hear God speak to you tonight. Jim, I want you to hear God speak to you tonight. Every one of you, I want you to hear God speak to you tonight through his word. We need to receive honor from God our Father by hearing his voice. Here we go. I know and feel that I belong and I am loved. I go to 1 John 3, verse 1. Look what it says here. How great is the love the Father has dabbed on us, right? No. It says lavished on us. That's the nearly infallible version. The King James says bestowed on us. Okay. How great is the love the Father has bestowed or lavished on us, that we should be called the children of God. And that is what we are, because you believe in Jesus and you believe in his death and his resurrection and you believe the work of the cross, you become adopted as his child. That is who you are. That gives you huge amounts of significance. You belong, okay? You are loved and you belong. How great is the love? It doesn't answer. It sort of puts it in a question, but it's not. It's a statement. How great is the love? It's beyond our comprehension. That we can become the children of God. That's what we are. That gives you a sense of belonging and love and significance. Look what Ephesians 3 says. I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have the power to grasp. You see, you're rooted and established in love. God is love. He loves you, and he wants you rooted and established in love. Father, would you teach us through the truth of your word? Would you plant it so deep in our heart that we actually believe this, that we believe this and we receive it, and it changes us? Look what it says, that you may have the power to grasp. It's important that we feel loved. You know, when I deal with a hurting people, I will ask them, I said, do your parents love you? And they'll go, yes. And I'll say, do you feel like your parents love you? No. I'm just telling you, if you don't feel loved by your parents, that love is not real to you. You might know it intellectually. Of course my parents loved me. They fed me. They gave me a home to live in. They took care of me. But you know what? You never felt it. And here's what. Look what Paul's praying. I am praying that you are rooted and established in love, and that you have the power to grasp, the ability to feel that you are loved by God. And how wide, how long, how high, how deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love. And he says it passes knowledge and understanding. That's amazing love. That's amazing love. We're going to quit before. Stop. It's been really good to be with you this weekend. Thanks for putting up with an old guy. A short old guy, Malcolm. It's been really good to be with you. Love you a lot, man. I'm going to leave a little bit of my heart with you. Maybe take some of your heart with you when I go home. I love you. You're my family. Do you know that? You know what's so awesome? I get into churches where I walk in and I don't know one single person in that church, because I get asked to go speak at a lot of places. And I'll walk in and I don't know anybody. I never met them before. And I go, do you know what's so interesting? Is our spirits can connect. Do you know why? Because we've got the same daddy. And because we have the same father, you're my brother. You're my sister. We're family. Isn't that awesome? That's a love that the world has no comprehension of. And I just want to thank you for being my brothers, my sisters. Love you a lot. Love you a lot. Look forward to coming back again. If I'm still welcome. Open it up for comments, questions, your thoughts. I'll wait for the invitation. Okay. No, you're just giving it. No. I saw I was on the schedule for next Sunday morning. I'll bring Grace back. Okay. No. Just kidding. Yes. Yeah. Awesome. Here's my kids. Any comments? Your thoughts?
Thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. It's a joy. It's a joy to be with you. That's why I left Grace at home. She's sure she'd let you know. Just kidding. I promise to bring her back next time. Yeah, thank you for that. All right, back to you.